This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
It's certainly been an innovation-heavy show tonight, talking about the future of the electric vehicle and the internal combustion engine and the impact that that potentially could have, not only globally but here in South Africa, to the circular economy, and now to have a look at the innovation ecosystem in the country. And the conventional view in mainstream economics is that governments have little capacity to spark innovation, that the state should play as limited a role in the economy as possible, so the thinking goes. But it's very far from the truth. If you look at the examples, if you look at the US, which is that arch bastion of capitalism, many of the great inventions in Silicon Valley have had the US government acting as a strategic investor through a decentralized network of public institutions. We've got the Defense Advanced Research Project, DARPA, NASA, the Small Business Innovation Research Program, and the National Science Foundation, all critical components of the innovation ecosystem in Silicon Valley. Recently, we had Tito's paper, as it's become referred to now, suggesting that the only way to effectively increase economic growth in the country in the long term is through improvements in productivity, and investment in innovation is one of the major drivers of productivity growth. So how should we be thinking about the states and various DFIs' roles in this ecosystem? It's a great pleasure to welcome a formidable panel tonight, starting in studio with Paul Curry, who's the Chief Investment Officer at the DBSA, and before joining the Development Bank, he held several senior management positions at Nedbank Group. Paul, great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Michael.
Also in studio, we've got Martin Sanner, who's the Executive Director for Materials and Manufacturing at the CSIR, and had a pleasure of meeting you, Martin, at a recent Siemens event where you gave a fascinating future-looking talk at the 4IR. So great to have you on the show.
Great to be here.
And on the line, we've got Christopher Ree, who is Head of New Industries at the Industrial Development Corporation, to round off our trio tonight. Christo, thanks for making the time.
It's my pleasure, Michael.
Paul, kick us off. Because in the case of so many developing countries, I think a low level of innovation is one of the key constraints to growth. I think that is pretty much accepted. More and more often, though, the debate is for the need for systemic support of innovativeness, innovation ecosystems, and what role the government should be playing. So I'm curious about your observations and reflections on the topic. What do you see as the most effective way to support innovation in South Africa?
Michael, I think just to start off with, to give you, the listeners, a sense of the Development Bank, for those who aren't fully au fait with what it is that we do. We're fundamentally positioned in the infrastructure space, focusing primarily on power, water, transportation, and ICT, all of which are currently massively affected by innovation. And infrastructure is essentially a means of delivering service. And when you look at the way innovation is changing that service delivery mechanism and service delivery potential, it's crucial for DFIs like ourselves to be taking risk on the edge, because essentially that's the role that we should fulfill. Mm. We're taking risks that the private sector aren't quite ready to take yet, but need to be taken to advance the possibilities that are inherent in the space.
And it's an interesting departure point, and to bring you in here, Christo, if you look at a traditional venture capital investor, they would have almost a portfolio approach where the winners, say you've got 10 investments, you've got two winners that are going to show, you know, 10 times money return, maybe five out of two times if you're lucky, and then a couple of real dogs that fail. Governments perhaps don't have that luxury. So how should government be looking at the way it plays almost a venture capital type role in the South African economy?
Thanks, Michael. Well, I think there is a role for government to play through various agencies, including the state-owned entities, including the likes of the DBSA, IDC. And I think those agencies, and I include agencies like the Technology Innovation Agency, should be there, as Paul puts it, to take a risk at the edge. But of course, we as IDC need to be remain self-sustainable, so we can never put our whole balance sheet at risk, but there is certainly a need, and we have done so in the past and will continue to do so in the future, to put some of our capital at risk and invest in those early stage opportunities, and in that way play our role as part of the bigger government family to stimulate venture capital in South Africa.
And speaking, Martin, to this investing at the edge, failure is often more likely, therefore, because you're investing at the edge. And where private capital is reluctant until you're going to get a DFI perhaps going in, it means that public organisations must be capable of taking chances and learning from trial and error, And if failure is an unavoidable part of the innovation game, surely government should be given more of a licence. There should be higher tolerance, yet we don't seem to have that tolerance. When there is failure, there does seem to be an awful lot of critique, specifically in the PIC, for example. Now, I'm going to strip out some of the political issues that we've seen at the Impartee Commission, but surely we need to develop far more appetite for that kind of risk in South Africa. Why are we so conservative?
Well, I think it's the nature of the thing that one needs to be conservative, and you know, I can respect any funder who is going to want to understand the risks around the investment. And part of our role at the CSR is to maybe de-risk technologies and to think about the future, long term and short term, and to look at the steps one needs to take to go new pathways. And you know, that starts very simply with very basic research, studying the markets, studying the technologies available, but also localizing technologies which may exist in the world, and then looking at fundamental research as well, which is more longer term. And if you paint that in a roadmap, that helps a funder make fundamental decisions. And I think the trend is in that direction. But if there's not a lot of money around, then one will want to have that de-risked right from the word go.
And an example that springs to mind freshly is the titanium powder industry, where to bring a proof of concept to market and on stream is not a couple of R100 million. I mean, it's a couple of R1 billion to get that going. But what you can create is a potential new industry as a result. So there does need to be this collaborative approach.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I mean, titanium is a good example. It's not really on the radar of industry in South Africa. You know, we have amongst the highest reserves in titanium in the world in South Africa, but we have no titanium industry. And that has a number of reasons, not only because it is actually very difficult to make titanium powder, it's a high capital investment, but one also needs to have the downstream industry in close reach, which means that one needs to master 3D printing, because you take the titanium powder which you make and you put it into an additive manufacturing machine or a 3D printer, and you can make parts. You can make parts for aircraft, for automobiles, for health, you know, human body parts, replacing bone. So that's an industry that needs to be developed, and it's certainly something we need to have on our radar now.
Christo, to go back to you, is that something when you look at as your role as head of new industries in the IDC, is that something that really excites you, that gets you out of bed every morning to say, here's a potential? Back to Tito's paper, the mention is of high growth firms. Where are the gazelles? Yes, we need to create a supportive environment in South Africa for SMEs and for entrepreneurs to thrive, but for government to play a very effective role and see a good return on effort, we need to be supporting high growth firms and potentially high growth new industries. How do you go about approaching that at the IDC?
Well, Michael, yes, this is what excites me and what, in my opinion, puts me in a position of one of the most exciting jobs in the country, is to head up a unit within the IDC with a strong balance sheet that has the mandate to develop new industries. It's in the name of the unit. So our mandate is to look for and then support the creation and growth of these new industries. And Martin's mentioned the titanium powder project together with the 3D printing. That is something that excites us a lot and that we have been staying very close to with the CSIR. But maybe just to give you a flavor of what we're looking at as potential new industries, not necessarily new, but nascent and growing industries in South Africa. Our main focus is, as the new industries unit, is on the clean energy solutions space. Now, that's a fairly widely defined space, but in that, we're specifically looking at energy storage solutions, but we're also looking at fuel cells as a potential for creation of a new industry. And then our other big focus areas on 4IR, but not necessarily focusing on technology for the sake of developing new technology, but rather using whatever technology there is, whether it's locally developed or whether we need to license it in, buy it in, to create new industries. So looking at the whole suite of 4IR technologies, be it physical or digital or biotechnologies, we are open for business and we're looking for those opportunities that can help us create these new industries.
And interesting that you say potentially the IP doesn't have to reside here, you can buy it in, because I've often had it put to me that perhaps where we see our commercialization break down, we've got very good research and development in our universities, for example, but we then struggle to commercialize this research and development. We struggle to patent it and to really take it to market. I don't know, Paul, maybe if you've got a view on that, having worked inside Nedbank and now inside the DBSA, as to what the different role players, be it private sector or DFI, need to play in order to help fund some of this R&D and to ensure that this innovation that we are developing in our universities becomes commercially implementable in the broader economy.
I think that's correct. And to some extent, we are moving slightly away from the traditional way we looked at this and have set up a specific portfolio. You talked about a risk appetite for higher levels of risk, and a couple of years ago the board actually set aside a chunk of our capital for that specific purpose, and we've broken it into four tiers essentially, one of which is to look at new technology and how we can support emerging ideas. And at the moment, we're looking at doing exactly that. There is a gap. There are folks coming out of university where they have no capacity to actually deliver, particularly in the science field. And one of the opportunities we're looking at now is in that space. And it's crucial that we actually exploit that asset before it flees. Otherwise, it either lies dormant or is marginally developed and then leaves the country. So that ability to fund that development is necessary. Mm. It's not a core component of what the DBSA does, but it's certainly allied to our broader delivery picture.
Mm. And just to stay on that broader delivery picture for a second longer, you say it is in infrastructure, and we know that it's a big component of trying to kickstart economic growth again. The president infrastructure fund, big gaps in water. The number that I've seen bandied about is between 800 and 900 billion rand. Wastewater treatment plants, we know energy is a big one, roads as well. Where do you see the greatest opportunity for innovation within that infrastructure suite?
I think probably if you look at the way we finance infrastructure in the country at the moment, it's either government funding it fully itself or essentially providing a guarantee or form of guarantee to the private sector to do that. What we're busy developing with Treasury and a number of other participants in the space is effectively a blended finance platform which talks to the infrastructure fund that the President announced last year. And the concept of that is really to create investable assets for the institutional investors who in the long run are looking for longer term assets with good quality underlying cash flows. And there are a number of infrastructure elements that actually have discountable cash flows associated with them. It's something that we're looking to announce fairly shortly, but it's fairly well down the development phase, and it should be coming out in some more detail in the next couple of months. There's significant work that's already gone on in the background to facilitate this with all the players, the private sector and the public sector, and there's general support around that. This is a mechanism to actually achieve a real kick-up in scale in the space.
I was facilitating a private equity course at Gibbs recently where one of the large institutional pension funds on a panel said they were specifically looking at projects in the water sector that have that predictable cash flow that matches with their long-term liabilities and very keen to play a partnership role. We have this talk about development and prescribed assets and are we doing enough? Surely if we see more of these bankable projects coming to market, it's not a lack of capital is what I'm trying to say. It's perhaps right now just a lack of these bankable projects. Yeah. What do you see as delaying the delivery of or the presentation of these bankable projects in South Africa?
I think historically it's been probably coordination because they're at various levels of preparation. The DBSA is involved in some of them. The PICC is involved in a large component of identifying and planning these programs. And it's really about drawing them together and executing them at scale. So the way we envisage this really is a programmatic form of infrastructure where there are repeatable types of projects. You talk about projects in the water sector. There are similar problems in many jurisdictions in that sector. So simplifying the solving of those problems instead of solving each one on its own is a mechanism to actually accelerate that and support the implementation of it. So there are a number of these sectors. There's water transport is another obvious space. The broadband space, which is not commercial, is another area that that offers a major opportunity. We're also working in the student housing area, where we have been for a while now.
And you mentioned student housing. I know you've recently, as a bank, launched a competition to support student, youth innovation. Is it student innovation? I'm trying to remember. I think it's a youth innovation competition that you've launched.
The Youth Challenge. Yes.
The Youth Challenge. So how does that work?
It was an initiative of the CEO. Really, to draw out, we have an inherent belief that we underestimate the capacity of our population in terms of being innovative. Typically, those close to the coalface are the ones who have the best ideas, but very often don't have the mouthpiece to get them out into the public domain.
Yeah,
and it's about trying to facilitate that kind of thing, and then providing a mechanism for those to be brought to fruition. I mean, we obviously can't do everything for everybody, but to the extent that we can sift and actually provide a mechanism to fund or to support the development of some of those concepts, we think there are very potentially unique solutions to some of our specific problems.
Necessity being the mother of invention. We're going to be broadcasting from the SU Summit, the South Africa chapter in Kyalami, and there's some amazing local solutions that have been developed out of necessity using local materials to treat water using nanotechnology, for example, and macadamia nut husks of all things, Martin. So we do have the innovative nature in South Africa. It's about getting that back to the ecosystem, getting that connected and that approach right. Tell me about what you're doing at the CSIR to play that catalytic role, because I believe you are developing almost a manufacturing proof of concept, a factory of the future. Right. You've got some really large additive manufacturing machines that you've developed over there. Just tell me a little bit more about the CSIR's work in this space.
Yeah, so obviously the big key word here is the fourth industrial revolution, and what we are trying to do is demystify it a bit. And what we've taken upon ourselves is to put together what we're calling a learning factory, but other people call it a smart factory or smart manufacturing environment. And really it's about the blurring of or fusion of technologies. So you're seeing physical, digital, biological technologies all merging in the manufacturing space, but also in the private space even. And there's new skill sets which are required to A, make products out of this, or to even design or invent those products. And so it's about initially about skills, identifying what is missing in our education system, what do we need to teach our kids. And I wish I was 20 years old again at this stage, because there's so much out there. But, you know, take, for example, the exoskeleton. And I had the honor of trying out an exoskeleton in Italy at the World Manufacturing Forum last week. And a skill will be how to master a machine. because this machine is going to be attached to you. You're going to have to do something with that machine. And the human will always stay in the center. The machine isn't going to take over from the human. The human has to manage that machine. So you're now starting to move the super arm, and you're going to do something with it, and it's quite a difficult thing.
Interesting to hear you take that approach. I've recently listened to the audio book because I had to do something on a holiday trip of Harari, Naval Harari's new book, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. He paints a rather more dystopian view of the future, where he sees biotech and infotech merging and almost making humanity redundant. What is your view on the convergence of these technologies and what impact it might have on jobs in South Africa?
Well, certainly worldwide, one is talking about, I'll use the example of manufacturing. There's about 800 million people employed in manufacturing and production industries. And about half of them have to reskill worldwide. So, you know, I don't have the numbers in South Africa off the top of my head, but we're about 11% of GDP, the world number is 30% of GDP. So you can assume that, you know, we've got a couple of million people that we need to start reskilling some and some new kids to bring in there. We obviously want to grow manufacturing. So, and manufacturing is going to change. We talk about the democratization of manufacturing. So machines have become cheaper. Mm. You can buy a 3D printer for $2,000 and you can make something with it. So, the man in the street, if I can call him or her that, has access to manufacturing capabilities in future through 4IR.
It is a wonderful world to be a 20-year-old inventor with all of this at your disposal. Christo, and that leads me into, segues into a nice little conclusion for this discussion tonight. And once again, in the Treasury paper, the suggestion that development finance should be made more accessible to new entrants, specifically by the Industrial Development Corporation, and a small business and innovation fund potentially being a mechanism or a vehicle through which this could be done, to focus on the ideation and startup phases of a business where the market failure and small business finance is most binding. How are you thinking about that kind of suggestion at the IDC?
Michael, innovation or funding of innovation has always been part of IDC's business. It's how we started. And us supporting businesses that seek to commercialize new innovations is and will remain part of IDC's business, and in particular the new industries SBU, but also all our other SBUs. All of our SBUs have mandates to support the commercialization of South African innovations. But as I've said earlier, it's a matter of there's a portfolio approach, so you can only put so much of your balance sheet at risk, and it's calculated risk. You don't, you know, when we talk about making early stage equity investments or venture capital investments, these are calculated risks. But as you pointed out earlier, the typical VC model is that one or two might succeed, and three or four might wash their own faces, and the rest will fail. So that is unfortunately the model, but these are risks that we are prepared to take.
Obviously, there are areas where we have a competitive advantage in South Africa. Mining, you know, historically, we have been a mining-based economy, and we still see a lot of mining-related innovation. I love chatting to the boys from Fochville, as I call them, Master Drilling, and how they've exported their raise boring technology all over the world. Are there specific sectors that excite you about South Africa at the moment that you say, well, right, these are the sectors that we're going to get our best return on effort out of?
Well, we're having a very close look at the data industry. We believe that it's an underexploited industry. It does not require huge investment in capital. We've got fantastic skills coming through the universities and in the private sector, and we can really use data as the new commodity and add value to it, extract it, add value to it, and sell it. So that is an industry that is hugely exciting to us. But then more closely linked to the mining industry, beneficiation of what we have, fuel cells, if that, I listened to your earlier talk, one of the speakers saying that it's either going to be battery electric vehicles or fuel cell electric vehicles. We have a different view. We think that those can coexist and might have different niche applications. So any beneficiation related opportunities remain exciting to IDC. These are industries that IDC was formed on and continue to have a massive exposure to. And we should continue to exploit those natural resources that we have.
And let's hope that we can see the structural impediments, some of the issues that have been causing so much doubt in the South African economy, things like security of energy supply and policy certainty, ironed out over the coming quarters so that we can get on with growing the economy and innovating, because we do, as we've just heard, have the right blend of DFIs. We've certainly got all of the necessity that is the mother of invention. We just need to harness all of that together. Christo Faree, Head of New Industries at the IDC, thank you very much, as well as Paul Curry, Chief Investment Officer at the Development Bank of Southern Africa, and Martin Sanner, Executive Director of Materials and Manufacturing at the CSIR. That's a wrap from the team tonight.